You're listening to Something More with Chris Boyd, Cape Cod's financial talk show.
Asset Management Resources, LLC, and J. Christopher Boyd, CFP, provide investment advice on an individual basis to clients only. Proper advice depends on a complete analysis of all facts and circumstances. The information given on this program is in the nature of general financial comments and cannot be relied upon as pertaining to your specific situation. AMR, LLC, cannot guarantee that using the information from this show will generate profits or ensure freedom from loss. Listeners should consult their own financial advisors or conduct their own due diligence before making any financial decisions.
Come on. Something More with Chris Boyd, Certified Financial Planner Professional.
I could work my life.
Your fulfillment facilitator.
Help me help you. Help me help you. Help me help you.
Your partner in prosperity.
Show me the money!
Jerry, you better go! Show me the money!
Advising clients across Cape Cod and across the country. Here he is, your host, J. Christopher Boyd.
All right, welcome. This is Something More with Chris Boyd. I'm Chris Boyd, Certified Financial Planner Practitioner, and my office is Asset Management Resources. We're a registered investment advisor firm right here in Hyannis, and we have an office in the same suite as my brother's estate planning law firm, Boyd & Boyd PC. We share that space. They're an estate planning firm. And then we also have an office in Dedham with my associate, Michael Perna, who is a certified financial planner practitioner as well. And our show is a financial program. We like to talk about anything you like, frankly, all things financial or otherwise. That's why we call it Something More, so we can talk about all those important dollar and cents issues, but also those quality of life issues that make the money matters matter. And so we'd love to get your calls in this first hour if you have anything you'd like to talk about. The number to participate in the program is 508-771-8900, 508-771-8900. That number gets you right through here to the WXDK studios while we're broadcasting today, and we'd love to hear from you with any questions you might have. Perhaps you're, you know, dealing with some kind of planning for, all right, it's a new year, you've been dealing with reviewing your stuff, and maybe you've come up with some questions or things maybe you need to change, but you're not sure exactly what, and you have some thoughts about it, whether that has to do with your cash flow or managing debt, or maybe it has to do with your investment plan at work, or perhaps you're thinking about insurance matters, life insurance or otherwise. Maybe you are getting ready to start thinking about your tax return. Can't say I'm an expert at all tax matters, but we can probably point you in the right direction. So, you know, whatever it might be, if you're thinking about some of your financial related considerations and you'd like to ask a question, we'd love to hear from you. 508-771-8900 is the number. And in our second hour, I'll tell you, we're going to have an opportunity just to be chatting with the other members of the some of our team over at Asset Management Resources. We'll talk a little bit about the economy, of course, and some issues in the news. We'll also we got some good trivia going for the Patriots game. We'll definitely be talking about that. Who can be talking about anything else, right? We've got the Patriots coming up. Going to be a fun day tomorrow. Hopefully a fun outcome. But in any case, in this hour, I have a guest with me. Thanks to Bruce Monrad for coming back to the show. Thanks for being here, Bruce.
Thanks, Christopher. Always appreciate it.
It's always fun to have you on. So you'll be with us for the hour, and we'll talk about all manner of things from big picture of what's going on in the economy down to specifics surrounding things that you deal with in your portfolio at Northeastern Investors Trust. So before we get to that, though, Bruce, we have Tom on the phone. So let's see what's on his mind. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
I want to talk about coffee.
Coffee? Okay.
You said we can talk about anything, right?
Anything at all. What did you have in mind about coffee?
I received a coffee cup in the mail. I wanted to thank you.
Oh, right. You had called in a few weeks back, and I said we'd send you something.
About, how many millionaires?
Yes,
what state has the most millionaires based on? That was a tricky part of the question. Based on population?
Yeah, per capita or whatever it would
be. Per capita,
yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
They originally said California, and if I listen to the rest of the question instead of jumping the gun and then find out.
We stumped you, huh? Yeah. Well, I forget who it was. Do you remember who it was? Was it like New Jersey or something?
It was in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, it was in the D.C. area. Yeah, it was one of the D.C. states. Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think it was. Because, you know, when I used to have a boat up in Scituate Harbor there, how many boats come into the harbor saying from Delaware?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because they save on the taxes, I guess.
I guess so.
I want to let you know that coffee cup, for some reason, when I put my coffee in, it comes out a lot sweeter. I don't know if you guys
Very nice. Well, I'm glad you're liking it. That's terrific. And it's got the Something More logo on it, right?
Yes.
Terrific.
And that's what I tell my wife, get any extra coffee there? Because there's always something more.
There you go.
Well
there
done.
You go.
I'm just messing, yeah.
Perfect. Well,
I'm going to look forward to listening to the rest of the show. Just want to thank you and have a great weekend.
Oh, Tom, you're the best. Thanks so much for calling about
thank
that.
You.
That was very kind
thank
of you. All right, well, have a good day and enjoy the game tomorrow, okay?
You got it.
All right. Thanks, and hopefully the rest of the show. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. What a nice gesture. Nice of him to call in. You know, we had some fun questions, and we had a couple of callers, and I was like, oh, well, I don't know exactly what we have back in the office, but I'm sure we got something that we can send you. So I knew we had mugs. So anyway, he got the mug. So very good. Anyway, and if you want to call in, the number's 508-771-8900. Happy to talk to you about whatever's on your mind, whether it's coffee or otherwise. If you have maybe something you want to ask about investments or any aspect of your financial planning, we'd be happy to hear from you and see if we can be a help in the process. So 508-771-8900. So, Bruce, in the meantime, while we wait for our listeners, if they want to call in, your area of expertise really revolves around high-yield debt, high-yield bonds. And, you know, it's funny because to deal with that, I'm sure you really need to be paying attention to all aspects of the economy and then down to the very specifics of different aspects of each potential investment that you might utilize. So how do you spend your time when you think about things? How much time is spent on the macro and how much is spent on the very specific?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. High-yield bonds, which are, as they say, they are one part bond and one part equity.
Yeah,
and
they really do have aspects.
Exactly. So, you know, we do have to think about the bond interest rates and the economy and macro concerns. And then we also, as you say, we have to think very granularly about the companies themselves. So it's one part bond, one part equity. And in fact, you know, you can almost decompose the returns, you know, how they do, by saying that they participate in half of an equity market move and half of a bond market move. So the beta, which is a way of measuring risk, is like 0.5.
Relative to like the stock market.
Exactly,
or yeah.
Exactly. So they're muted response to both, to movements in both markets.
Interesting, right? That's kind of the best of both worlds in that respect, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's you know, maybe talk about things big picture to more particulars and so forth. So let's think that way in terms of how we might approach our conversation today. And again, by the way, if anyone wants to call in, whether it's on the topics we're speaking of or something particular to your own situation, you're more than welcome to call in. We'd be happy to hear from you at 508-771-8900. So my guest is Bruce Monrad, and he is a portfolio manager what is your title, chief executive officer?
Yeah, chairman of the trustees of Northeast Investors Trust.
Northeast Investors Trust. So, you know, let's talk about the economy and sort of big picture. You know, what should we be paying attention to? How much should we be, you know, at the end of last year, markets really took a dive. That is to say, equity markets really took a dive. I imagine that's true for high-yield bonds as well because of the concerns that were going on in equities. Where those were somewhat driven by the notion of, oh my gosh, there might be a recession. It seemed like a big driver was a lot of worry about recession on the horizon. Should investors be worried?
Yeah, we're relatively sanguine on the pure economic fundamentals going on right now, and as you point out, so if we went back to say October 1,
yeah.
We were all thinking about to what extent the Fed would continue to raise interest rates,
right?
And the economy was off to the races, and in our world, that is, which is to say high yield bonds, that would have been the biggest concern at that point, and then right about then. The market shifted, mm-hmm. and there are concerns about the direction of the economy, and our two cents, as I say, we're relatively sanguine. You know, there are a bunch of one-off things that got in the way. We think of the economy, and our big picture view would be that that expansions don't die of old age. Our expansions don't die of old age. So
it is relevant. We are pretty long in the tooth on this economic expansion, right? We're 10 years or whatever. How long? When did they mark the beginning of this recovery or whatever?
Yeah, probably at some point in 2009. So it is a very long one.
And second longest still. We're getting close to. We're right on the cusp, I think, soon.
I think that's right.
I don't think we're yet at the longest. And so, there's a reason that. That would be the case, right? It's not normal for an economy to continue to expand as long as this has. I think some of the things people were worried about were, we had really a boost in earnings and benefit from the tax reform, and some of that is likely to start working its way out of, you know, earnings, new numbers as we go through this year. And will that be a worry to investors? And then, what you'll be looking at when it comes to evaluating the economy? We've seen things that are interest rate sensitive, housing and automobiles, things like that, start to show some signs of impact from the rising rates. So we share the same view, incidentally. So I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here,
yep.
But what should investors be paying attention to when to be aware of? Okay, maybe there's a turning point on the horizon, and how does one evaluate that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question, and again, maybe we look at some anecdotes, and you mentioned housing, and there absolutely was a slowdown in housing in the fourth quarter, and that's an interest rate sensitive sector.
Yeah,
and so people pay attention, including the Fed. As I was coming down here, I was listening to a couple of earnings calls from housing companies. Their fourth quarter calls just happened now, and they would say, that things got a little better in December, and that January is kind of okay. Although having said that, they're not really providing guidance for until the spring selling season gets going. But anyway, that's the type of thing that we might look to try to read the tea leaves of what's going on in autos. We spent time thinking about the European auto sector, and there was a big bump in demand and then a big fall off in demand related to emissions testing there. So, that's a big one over there. Also, I kid you not, the level of the Rhine River in Germany has mattered because it's low.
It's been very low, yeah.
Exactly, low.
I remember hearing about stuff where people were on a cruise and they had to get off and the boat couldn't make it because it was so low, yeah.
That's right. And another company I was listening to coming down here, a chemical company, was saying that, during the fourth quarter, that the low levels meant that they couldn't get barges full of chemical products down that. Now, those things that we just mentioned there, some of them are kind of one time and we think might dissipate. So that sort of underpins our thinking that the situation will improve a little bit here.
One of the other major factors that people generally pay attention to is consumer spending and confidence and all that sort of thing, because of the importance of consumption in our economy. How's that stand in general view of is the consumer in any way either spending too much and getting into debt? Or, maybe losing an appetite because of anxieties or government shutdowns or whatever it might be?
Yeah, certainly government shutdown. That's a hiccup that has some impact or will have had some impact on the economy. And definitely I think both consumer and business confidence, also slowed down a little bit in the fourth quarter when the markets were kind of volatile.
Hmm.
Very, very recent data would be that new orders, factory orders, were up, and that's a good thing. And then, of course, we had a great employment report yesterday, 300,000 new jobs. And, if 300,000 new people are getting paychecks, that's probably a good thing for tomorrow. If they're getting paychecks today, it's a good thing for consumption and tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So you generally have this outlook that economy is okay.
Yeah, we do spend time on what we would call, it's fashionable to call these days, the tail risks. The things like trade wars, Brexit, sovereign debt in other places. We do have to pay, and the shutdown. So we do have to pay attention to those. But if we can get past those, then we're relatively sanguine.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those things, though. Ultimately, before we do, just what will you be paying attention to as we go ahead? Do you have any? I mean, one can never predict, directly when to expect a problem. But, your outlook is not one that you're concerned about it today. For how long do you how do you evaluate that ongoing? Like, when do you sort of shift gears on something like that? Is it the way you look at things, you think the next year looks good? Is it multiple years? Is it months? Like, how far out do you...
For the general economy or for the tail risk things?
No, just for the economy generally, when you're saying, hey, we're feeling pretty good. We're not too concerned right now.
Yeah. I think again, our starting point would be that expansions don't die of old age. And then, but, when you have, the economy's done so well in the last decade, and the amount of slack has diminished, because the unemployment rate is much lower now, and can't go from 10 to, it's gone from 10% to 4%. It can't go from 4% to -2%.
Yeah.
So the diminishment of slack in the economy, I think we have to admit that does mean that it is a little more vulnerable to a speed bump than it is if the unemployment rate is 10%, in which case there's room for upside, good things.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's come back to those tailwind issues that you talked about. You want to walk through them a little bit? You talked about trade, Brexit, sovereign debt, shutdown as an example. And let's start with that one last. That last one first. I mean, that's not resolved yet entirely.
No, that's true, and that's true. Now, we need to say that, it's not easy for any of the families that are subject to the shutdown.
Sure.
I guess the good news is that, all their pay will be made up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, from a macroeconomic standpoint, the paychecks will continue, just delayed, and so that's again, from a macro standpoint.
Yeah, there's some added cost potentially because of borrowing that had to be done and things like that.
Right.
So they may not fully be made whole, but they're likely to be largely
right.
made whole.
So, you know, that might do borrow a little bit of demand from this quarter, or earlier part of this quarter, but we hopefully get it back. And, you know, we would prefer to have it resolved going forward, let's put it that way.
Sure.
So I know we've only bought a little bit of time, but we'll see how that pans out.
Any expectations as to how that'll evolve?
I think the pressures were considerable and that there'll be some deal. It may be that there's no deal and the president invokes emergency orders, whether that's okay or not. But that may be
it
might be
addressed.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Well, we'll hope for the best.
And
we'll probably talk about that more next hour, too. So let's start with trade. That's also, a U.S. Aspect of this, primarily with China, that we think about that issue. On the one hand, we get the sense that the tariffs are having a greater impact on the Chinese economy. You get the sense that the Chinese economy is somewhat slowing. Relative to how much of that is relative to specifically tariffs, hard to determine. More broadly, it's just spoken about that China is going through a transition from being more of an export economy to be more of a consumer-driven economy among its own population. How should we think about this trade thing? And if it turns out that, for example, a consequence of that is that China ends up going into recession if it's not resolved, in the next few months. What is it, March, that we have this, sort of deadline looming. Do we have to worry about that having an overflow impact on other parts of the emerging market economies that are largely, impacted by material, selling of material goods to China as part of that, as part of their own economic strength, I don't know. What do you think? So you follow where I'm going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely something to pay attention to, China. And it might be productive to bracket it a little bit. We import $500 billion a year from export $100 billion to them. So when we think about consequences, we might start there, and so
we have less to lose than they
that's
do.
That's right. It's an interesting
currently.
Point, right?
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of leverage, is the point that in this conversation between the American president and the President Xi or whatever, is he president anyway?
I think that's right.
Yeah, in these negotiations. So, okay, and that the reality is that will change over time. Our economic strength in the world, we're a much bigger part of the world economy today than we're projected to be, 20 years from now or whatever.
Right.
And so that's a big part of probably the president's rationale as to we've got more leverage now to try to renegotiate these things than we're going to have in the future. So, that's part of the backdrop.
Right. And so I think we would say that, so again, and $100 billion matters. That's again the export number.
Right.
But we are a $17-18 trillion economy. So, it's not that big. Now, having said that, we do want a healthy Chinese economy and emerging markets. You mentioned that. That's the if China is the world's factory, they are importing a lot of things from a lot of raw materials from emerging markets.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think it's absolutely fair to say that individual companies, even here in the United States, individual commodities like copper and the like, iron ore from Australia, that can be affected by a Chinese slowdown. And then from our standpoint, in the nitty-gritty of our day job, there is uncertainty with regard to how this plays out from a political, what retribution will occur. So, when we think about a chicken company, we we're a little unclear as to whether the price of soybeans or corn that goes into the making, whether that will go up or down because of the trade war, and also the chickens themselves. So
and that
there's
all plays into the individual security that you might want or not want to hold because of how you think how this all plays out.
That's right. Wow. And so there's uncertainty that on a microeconomic basis that we have to factor in.
Mm. You know, we have to take a break. Let's come back and talk more about some of these tailwind ideas and more anything you want to talk about.
Great.
We have 508-771-8900. If you want to ask a question, I'm happy to hear from you. We'll be right back after a quick commercial. Stay with us. Welcome back to Something More with Chris Boyd on WXTK 95.1 FM, News Radio 95 WXTK. All right, we've got Bernie on the phone, and if you want to call in, give us a call at 508-771-8900. Hey, Bernie, what's on your mind?
Okay, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was listening to Bob Brinker. I think you
sure.
know who Bob Brinker is.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a caller, and the caller asked, are we ever going to pay down the national debt? And his immediate answer was, no, we aren't. How long? I think we're overspending, what, the federal government is approaching $1 trillion every year. How many years can this go on? It just can't run my household like that.
Right. Well, the other side of that, Bernie, is you don't print your own money either. So there is an aspect
well,
of that.
Well, actually, I do.
Right. So it's working. Let's hear from our guests. So Bruce Monrad, do you want to offer some insights as to how to approach this question of this comes up a lot. People are naturally concerned about this. You know, you really can't even conceive of. You know, how many trillions of dollars, what $1 trillion is, let alone, what is it, $20 trillion or whatever we are in debt. How does one make sense of why it is that we can still continue to run on deficits and accumulate this debt, and how long before investors decide they're not willing to lend us their money, in effect. What do you think?
I think that might be the central investing question of the next decade. We're running $1 trillion deficits right now, and as a bond market investor, it's very concerning. And because at some point we're now as you're the math you're suggesting is we're running around 100% of GDP is the debt of the country. And other countries have gotten into trouble when they've run up debt. And it's a very unpleasant process. Just go look at Greece.
And we're supposed to be in a good economic setting, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a legitimate concern and one of the, the frustrations. As much as, there are things to really be happy about with the results of the tax code revision, it does exacerbate this issue, which creates some problems if we, on a rainy day, need to deal with, like, trying to mm-hmm. boost our problem, deal with our problems. How do we deal with that? Doesn't the issue ultimately, and Bernie, I think there's no one really has a good answer to this in truth, as I understand it, because it's subject to change. Essentially, today, investors around the world are willing to lend money to the United States in the form of treasury debt, essentially buying our bonds.
Right.
Because a lot of things are done in U.S. dollars, and it's the currency.
Oil in particular.
Yeah, and so that's a part of it. And then the other thing is that it's perceived that we're a good risk. We're going to make good on the debt. If someone borrows money from the U.S. government, the reality is that we're different from Greece or wherever because we do ultimately control the printing press, and that does allow for the opportunity to essentially create more dollars and devalue that debt if it comes to that, and that's not what we want, obviously. That would be problematic. But in times of stress, you know, in good times, people might be willing to lend us lots of money. It might still be, you know, much greater than it is today. But if we end up in recession and tax revenues are down and, you know, there's bad things happening, that could change, and that could cause, you know, the need to keep raising interest rates, make that debt more costly. And that would ultimately cause it to chew up the budget, the government budget. And so it's
run the printing presses 24/7.
Yeah, I think essentially that's the worry, right? I mean, and I think so it is, I think, properly a question. Now, at the same time, you know, there's a lot of money that goes through the U.S. Treasury, or you know, when it comes to the IRS, you know, and tax revenues and so forth. So it is a matter of scale on one hand, too. You know, these numbers are hard to conceive, but it's also hard to conceive how much tax revenue is actually received. You know, so that's, you know, let's keep it somewhat in perspective. But I think it's something that, you're right, it definitely is something that we have to get on a better path, and, you know, it's not sustainable forever. Particularly, you want to be able to rely on, you know, having increased debt. You know, think about what happened in 2008. There was all this effort to stimulate the economy, and, you know, we, you know, had trillions of dollars of deficits in that effort. Whether or not it worked is maybe a fair question, but ultimately this is a common thought process, is to have government spend when others aren't, and to keep the economy moving. And, you know, it's a reality that effort will likely happen again in some point in the future. So we don't want to be in a position where, oh, sorry, you're not really willing to lend you any more money unless it's at a extraordinary cost. And at some point, costs will go up anyway, irrespective of, you know, future problems. So,
yeah, it would be nice. Politicians were talking about living on the amount of taxes they collect, but no matter how much we give them, it's never quite enough. So.
Well, I agree with that, but I also recognize the reality that there are some demographic issues that are factors in our budget that aren't going to go away, you know, for the next decade or two. And the reality is that when it comes to certain kinds of costs, they're going to continue to increase. And as a society, we're not willing to not have them increase when it comes to issues relating to Social Security or Medicare, Medicaid. Those are certainly big budget items, you know, big parts of the national, budget, that, you know, the government budget, that we don't necessarily have the appetite to do something different about.
No.
And I would expect it's probably not going to get better more quickly until there's some kind of crisis, right? You know, so there's really some kind of a problem on the horizon. So, well, anyway, that didn't give you any confidence, did it, Bernie?
Chris, I got it. No, it helped, though. Chris.
Yeah.
You said you know, the $1 trillion is so hard to visualize. A couple years ago, I read Glenn Beck wrote a book called Broke. And in there, he said $1 trillion. And I actually went through the calculation to prove that this was true. You take a football field, end zone to end zone, stack it 7 feet high, cover the entire field 7 feet high with $100 bills, there's $1 trillion. And I actually went through and found the thickness of a bill.
Yeah,
and I did all the math, and that's what it comes out to.
That's
when you're
incredible.
Watching a football game tomorrow. You can
perfect, nice tie-in there, Bernie. Love it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Great call, Bernie. Thanks for calling in. Hope you'll call again sometime. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's take our another break here, and then we'll be back with Bruce Monrad, my guest this hour, from Northeast Investors Trust. By the way, his his mutual fund. If you want to look into the prospectus and get information, the ticker is NTHEX, correct?
Correct.
All right, check it out. All right, we'll be right back after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to Something More with Chris Boyd. Thanks for being with us. And my guest this hour has been Bruce Monrad. He's from Northeast Investors Trust. I keep doing that, don't I? Again, I mentioned the ticker symbol, NTHEX. It's a high yield bond fund, and as always, not necessarily the right thing for everybody. You want to check out your the prospectus to evaluate if this is right for you. This is a kind of bond fund that has credit risk, and it's been around a long time. You guys have been, how long you've run that fund?
Oh, for it's father-son team. We've been doing it for, where my father's been doing it for 50 years.
50 years, yeah. Isn't that incredible? So definitely has quite a bit of track record.
Yeah.
So in any case, we were talking before about things like the tailwinds, and we didn't really get to Brexit and sovereign debt, but these are also things that you pay attention to,
right,
in thinking about how to frame the picture of where you think things are going, and how to maybe identify which industries are more or less likely to be benefited or impacted adversely, and that factors into some of the then other decisions you do in picking apart a company. Since we're talking and having a good conversation, but on more broad stroke kinds of issues, it's probably worth talking a little bit about sort of the high yield bond environment. For example, spreads relative to treasuries. It's not been necessarily the best environment for high yield bonds. You mentioned at the end of last year that some of the impact that equities had have an impact to a lesser extent perhaps, but on high yield bonds. Where do you see things right now when it comes to the credit markets? And maybe also just we talked about this before the show when you and I were talking, but maybe get into that notion of that all that triple B debt as well. Let's make sure we talk about that too,
sure,
as to how that could factor into things you think about. So give us a bigger, broad stroke. Where are we at?
I think it's probably again good to go back to September, and high yield bonds as the index would have yielded about 6%, which is a pretty big number at that point. Treasuries were approaching 3, so it was 6 and something versus 3% for treasuries. In the market weakness that occurred in the fourth quarter, high yield bonds have now the yield on them has risen out to 7%.
Okay.
But
getting a little more compensation.
Yeah. So there's more. Exactly right. So there's more. There's more return there. But as you point out, these are you have to pay attention to the individual credits, and so that's a good thing. And of course, Treasury bond yields have gone from 3% to, let's call it, 2.5% in round numbers.
Yeah, that's true too.
And right. So they've become less attractive, whereas high yield bonds have become more attractive. Now you did mention
that's partly because their price is appreciated in the midst of anxiety from investors in the fourth quarter last year, right?
That's exactly the catalyst.
But that started to give back some of that, and maybe the timing is relevant in all this to say maybe you're thinking is now an opportune time for people to have more credit risk, or do you think not so much?
Well, we're pretty upbeat on the relative prospects of credit of high yield bonds versus treasuries, and go back to September, we were fairly defensively positioned.
Okay.
When things were that way.
That's good.
Kind of a fun fact would be that Fed President Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan, when he was citing in his most recent speech three factors that were governing whether he was going to vote in favor of raising interest rates, one of them is, he said, high-yield bond spreads have widened out, and so that gives me a little bit of pause. So, the idea that we're a canary in the coal mine, if high-yield bond spreads, the spreads meaning the yield difference between high-yield bonds and treasuries, if that gap widens, the Fed pays attention.
Okay.
So, which is kind of interesting. Maybe it's a Powell put.
Yeah. You also had reference to the idea of talking about the yield curve in our conversation. We haven't gotten to do that because we've had calls and had some great other topics of conversation.
Yeah.
Tell us your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so the yield curve, which is to say yield plotted against the maturity of the bond, so that has flattened in the most recent years, you don't get paid a lot of extra interest rate for taking longer term for owning longer term bonds, and that's a very different phenomenon compared to normally.
Often indicates people who are investing in that long end of the curve maybe are a little more skeptical about the prospects for growth, right? Because they're thinking that short-term rates are going to go down.
Well, that's right. And there are those, we are not exactly among them, but there are those who think that an inverted yield curve, when short-term rates yield more than long-term rates, would be a very good predictor of a recession. It has a little bit, but we're just not quite sure whether we would sign on the dotted line that it's absolute.
In this instance, because so much of it is impacted by the tinkering that the Fed has been doing with buying bonds, selling bonds, raising rates, reducing rates, some of this is maybe perhaps a consequence of some of the impact.
We would agree on that.
Yeah,
we would agree.
So it may be less reliable than historically it has been the case. Is that your thought?
We would agree on that.
So you'd be looking for the preponderance of other evidence in addition to that, perhaps.
Exactly. That's our two cents.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. A lot of people talk about, and we've talked about this in recent weeks, the fact that there's a lot of triple B credit that's ballooned in the aftermath of, or maybe as a consequence of Fed low interest rate environment, corporate bond debt, even credit quality, but has increased dramatically. And there's a lot of concern that if we have bad times or liquidity concerns, that some of these bonds that are currently rated triple B really don't deserve to be rated triple B. How does that factor into your thinking as an investor who would invest in bonds that are below triple B rating, generally speaking?
Right. And there are some very, very large issuers, and if they were to be downgraded to high yield, to junk, there would be probably some forced sellers of those bonds. Maybe not all of them, but and just to put some numbers on it, GE is about $100 billion, AT&T is multiples of that, 400 billion, and the overall high yield market is a little over a trillion. So if there were forced sellers, that could be indigestion there. How do we manage it? We've kept our duration relatively short, the maturities of our bonds relatively short, so they are less vulnerable to if there were spreads widening out on a temporary basis because of that technical factor. But it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Is that something that you would be eager to be a buyer and be opportunistic in those settings? Or is it something because you might see those credits rebound and give that some better pricing later on? Or is it something that you'd say, no, those are really, in the case of a name like a GE or something like that, that is one that investors know, but has seen some dramatic changes over the last several years in its price, for sure, and even in the way they're trying to operate the company. Is that a value or is that a problem?
It's a short term. I think it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because
if something like were to happen.
That's
like that.
Right. I mean, I think the GE preferred they've got. I think there's a GE preferred that traded down to the certainly the 70s, and it's 80 something today. So if you could
so
have
you look
that
at
right,
those kind of opportunities to say and try to do advanced planning about the numbers, the whether that's a good risk.
That's
and
right.
You try to jump on those when those occasions happen.
That's right. And Pacific Gas was downgraded and then was filed for bankruptcy, so it never even came into our market. It went straight from investment grade to defaulted security, actually.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So now is something like that ever instance where you'd say, maybe there's some opportunity in the extreme?
Yeah. As surprising as may sound, it might make a good buy at some point. We owned Pacific Gas when it went into bankruptcy 15 years ago. We haven't bought it this time, but just because something's in bankruptcy, it doesn't mean that there's a problem.
That you couldn't get your money back if you picked the right pick.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that you guys do, all ranges of risk in that high-yield space.
Exactly.
Bruce, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We barely scratched the surface. We had so much we were going to talk about today. Thanks for coming in and coming from your home in Newton. And you said your office is in Boston, right?
In Boston.
All right, terrific. Well, we've got a break. Check it out, Northeast Investors Trust, NTHEX. We'll be back next hour, so stay with us for Something More with Chris Boyd right after.